Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of The Connected Physician. I'm Katharina Jünger, your host, and I'm inviting inspiring leaders and practitioners in healthcare who share their journey, how they use technology to support them, and their thoughts on what it takes to provide patients with better care. Today, I'm here with MD Integration CEO, Dr. Mark Sirota. He graduated from medical school in 2007 at the age of 23. Is board certified in dermatology, pediatrics, immunology, and obesity medicine, and licensed in 45 states. Mark is also a national speaker in all of these specialty areas. Mark is very familiar with the field of telemedicine, and that will actually be our focus topic for today. He's been practicing telemedicine since 2014, has been working on many different telemedicine platforms, before actually starting his own company, MD Integrations, in 2021, a white-label telemedicine doctor network and technology platform. Mark, thank you so much for being here today.
All right, thanks so much for having me.
So, Mark, I talked to so many physicians across the country about, amongst other things, telemedicine, and most of them are really unhappy with the current state of telemedicine. Most of them tried it out. They were forced to do it during the pandemic, but now it doesn't really make sense for them. Reasons that I hear is number one, it's so hard to run it efficiently. It takes up so much time of the administrative support staff. And then number two, even if they have the setup right, volume is so low. Can you share us more about your really long and really intensive experience as a physician practicing in telemedicine?
You know, I've been practicing telemedicine for the past decade or so, and I hear these complaints as well before, during, and after the pandemic. And the way I explain it is you have to craft the user experience for the physician very differently than if your patient had seen you in their office. So the way we practice via telemedicine is really practicing from the negative, meaning the patient comes in and they already know either the treatment or at least the symptoms of the problem that they are having, and they want to access care in a much more streamlined, easy way. So someone who says, "Doctor, I have abdominal pain, what's wrong with me?" That's not a telemedicine visit. Or someone who says, "I have a rash," and then they don't upload a photo before they see the doctor, that's not a good use case either. What's a good use case is, I have a rash, I'm going to fill out an intake about that rash, I'm going to upload photographs of that rash, so when the doctor then sees the case, they have everything they need in front of them in order to successfully treat the patient. So we practice from the negative. And the large direct-to-consumer brands, the patient goes through what feels like an e-commerce experience saying, I want this particular treatment, like a GLP for weight loss, for example. And then everything flows from the fact that that patient is interested in that treatment. So when the doctor picks up the case, they already have all of the information they need. So that's problem number one, is give the doctor a better user experience than what they would experience in their own office by teeing up the case based on what the patient's interested in. The second problem you brought up is the volume issue. And there's two ways to integrate telemedicine into your practice. The first is to essentially just offer it as an extension of your existing brick and mortar practice, which is always going to be relatively low volume and basically just shifts those visits that could be done at home to the home settings so that you open up your schedule for more in-person visits, which is really not a way to necessarily supplement your income as a physician. What's a great way to supplement your income as a physician is to work for a direct-to-consumer brand or a company like mine that services hundreds of brands and say, I want to jump into telemedicine with two feet. I want to get licensed in lots of states so I can see patients all over the country. And I want to work with a brand or a collection of brands whose core competency it is to acquire patients or acquire customers at a cost that makes sense, and they bring the cases to you. So it costs you nothing to acquire those patients or those customers, and that user experience is being crafted so that when you see them, it's a really efficient interaction. That is what actually scales and what creates massive clinician satisfaction, because everything has been crafted for their experience.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. So perhaps to double down on that concept that you just shared. So basically, assuming I am a physician, I have my own practice, and now you would basically advise me not to offer telemedicine as a second channel to my existing patient base, but basically to really choose a platform such as yours as an additional revenue channel that is really separate from my own practice. One topic that I also hear is like, but then that's a second program, so to say, you know, it's like a different EMR, it's a different way to prescribe, it's like billing, everything will be different. Can you help me, like, what are you doing specifically to kind of make that onboarding process easier, to make it less burdensome for the physician to basically learn an entire new platform?
Yeah, so what I do and what our company does, and I think what any good telemedicine company does, is we give you a great intuitive experience that is the secret sauce of a doctor coming to work on the platform. Is for a unit of their time, it's actually more valuable for them to work on the platform than anything else professionally that they're doing. And we measure that doctor's user experience down to the millisecond. So yeah, it should be intuitive. It should be easy to use. It should have all the functionality to make it efficient, but also compliant. And it shouldn't feel like a burden to onboard with a company like that, with a new physician. So for our company, most doctors are up and running seeing patients from the time we first onboard them to the time they're live seeing patients is 48 to 72 hours. Mm-hmm. And essentially within a week, I get no further, you know, questions or messaging or anything from the doctors, and they're off and running, and it's very intuitive because we crafted it entirely with the doctor's user experience in mind. So we let the brand control the customer's experience. We control the doctor's experience, and those two things get connected via the API. So the feedback I get is it's easier to work on our platform than any other EHR they've ever worked with, because that's our secret sauce, is giving the doctors the best user experience in the whole industry. And in terms of onboarding with insurance, at least for us, it's really simple. We don't take insurance. So every single patient is a cash pay patient. So there's very little administrative work to do or burden, because the patients are paying what would be less than their normal copay to interact with the doctor. So the doctors are all contracted with us and the patients are all paying cash. So it's actually quite easy and scales really, really easily.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Can you share more about, like, perhaps open question, are you thinking about going into insurance-based kind of encounters, patients eventually too? I understand the complexity is much higher, but then also the market is huge. What are your thoughts?
The market is huge, but I very much favor asynchronous interactions. This most of the time is not covered by insurance, at least in many cases. The second thing is, we give people a reliably low cost, so it's usually less than their actual copay, versus if you're billing insurance and the year just turned over and they haven't met their out-of-pocket costs, they might actually get a bill for something that's much higher because they have to pay into that before the insurance starts paying. Mm-hmm. So would you rather pay less than your normal copay, or would you rather potentially have a liability there where the patient ends up having to pay $150 or $200 for that visit because they didn't meet their out-of-pocket yet? So we like everyone gets to access us easily in a uniform way at a cost that's less than their copay. So we don't feel the need to bill insurance for these visits. We like to keep it easy and affordable for the patients in all cases.
Yeah. And so perhaps to make it even more operationally easier to understand from a physician perspective. So let's say I decide to join your platform because I think it's an interesting additional revenue stream. Question number one would be kind of the licensing piece. Would you also help me with getting licensed in many states? And then number two, how would I integrate it into my practice? So do I commit to a certain number of hours? Can I just basically pick patients whenever I have time? How does those two pragmatic basically questions work?
So we fill up your queue with patients, and if you work them, great. And if you don't work them, then they'll get reassigned to another physician who logs in. So we don't tell you how, where, and when to work. You log in, whatever is convenient for you. Mm-hmm. So I say it's sort of like if you envision a vase that has Christmas ornaments, and that's your regular practice. I can't fill up the vase with any more Christmas ornaments. That's what you went to medical school for. That's what your normal practice is. But I can pour sand into that vase. So asynchronous telehealth is like the in-between time. That's the sand. So instead of scrolling through Instagram, you're scrolling through patient cases and actually generating a could be a substantial secondary revenue stream for yourself while helping patients access high quality care. So that answers one of the questions. The other question about licensing is we will help you get licensed, but it's actually quite easy. There's something called the Interstate Medical Licensure Compact, and I think there's 38 or so states that are in the compact. So if you are licensed in one of those states and that's your primary state, you can now get licensed in most of the country very easily. You basically have to sign up for that program and pay the licensing fees. So it's a little bit of an upfront investment in terms of paying for the additional licenses, but it is way, way worth it. That's why every telehealth doctor I know has, you know, 30, 40, some of them have all 50 state licenses, because every state is valuable and allows you to get additional volumes from the companies that we partner with. So some doctors do it as a in-between thing, and some doctors actually have made it their primary focus and source of revenue, and they get to do that whenever, wherever they want in the world, really, as long as they're licensed in those states.
Yeah, interesting. And now double-clicking on the physician experience, I totally agree with you that this is kind of the most important value proposition that you bring to the table, really basically having an environment that is even nicer to work at than basically the typical offline processes that they would see. Can you go deeper on that? What does the flow look like? Do you use AI already?
Yeah, so again, the patient would sign up for that particular treatment that they're interested in, and we've crafted an intake form that makes sense for that treatment to ask essentially what doctors would ask if they were in the office in front of them and were interested in that treatment. We highlight any abnormal answers for them very easily, so they can go through the intake, and if everything's normal answers, you can get through it very quickly, and if something's abnormal, then we'll highlight that to make sure the doctor's aware. We pre-code in things like chart noting and thank you messaging. We use wildcards, so it's all very personalized for the patients, but the doctor doesn't actually have to spend time typing out lots of things. So the patients get a very personal experience, and they can message their doctor as much as they want after the visit, but the doctor gets a very, very efficient platform where they can get through a case and do all of the things they need to do. And we do use AI in a number of places in the record, and we're continually expanding that. But for example, a doctor doesn't have to check someone's photo ID. AI can do that. You know, a doctor can type out a short, you know, tiny message because they're busy people, and then they click a button and it turns it into a beautiful caring message. So we use AI where appropriate. What we don't do is substitute AI for where a human being that's medically trained should be communicating, but we certainly augment the experience so that it becomes as efficient as possible and helps fill in some of those gaps where appropriate.
Yeah. So you are not yet substituting the doctor. I would love to hear your thoughts. I'm sure you are also aware of like the new OpenAI operator that was launched last week, and then the researcher, which is like both of them are so mind-blowing in the quality of what they can deliver. What is your thoughts, especially in asynchronous telemedicine, so basically where you don't talk with a human being face-to-face, but rather basically receive, for example, a prescription purely asynchronously through intake forms and chat? That might not be a popular opinion. You're a physician yourself, but do you actually think that asynchronous telemedicine will still be delivered by doctors, let's say, in 2 or 3 years?
I think it will be dictated by the regulatory environment. And I don't see a world where regulators say we can totally automate a process where patients can be prescribed something without a doctor's hand approving it. What I will say is it's very tempting to say a lot of these interactions, if you signed up and said, you know, I specifically want a GLP-1, you know, we would look at your BMI, we would look at any exclusionary criteria, all of that is coded into the intakes, et cetera. But the reality is it's a very algorithmic process to say this person would either qualify or not qualify. So if you have a total happy path case and it's just a totally vanilla, nothing going on, BMI makes sense, everything's good, then you would say, well, we could really just put that in a bucket and just say this person's going to get approved. But from a regulatory perspective, that would not happen. From an efficiency standpoint, it makes sense that if they meet all of the things algorithmically that you're looking for in order to safely prescribe, that it becomes very algorithmic and AI is fully capable of handling that. But from a regulatory perspective, I would very much doubt in my lifetime if someone would be able to access a prescription level product without a doctor doing something manually to approve that. But we can get right up to that line and tee something up for a doctor to the extent that's acceptable from a regulatory perspective.
Ah, interesting. And so you already touched on GLP-1s and prescriptions. Is prescribing GLP-1 the number one kind of encounter type on your platform?
It is. And I would say throughout my medical career, and I just recently became board certified in obesity medicine this October, nothing in my medical career has been anywhere close to as impactful on the health of the United States and the world as GLP-1s for obesity. And we heard about the obesity epidemic all throughout medical school and all of the diseases that it had been impacting. And now it's the next decade of medicine, in my opinion, is all about reversing those trends and seeing how the quality and quantity of people's lives dramatically change. So I think the point is, how do you access that care for patients that need it? And the truth is, if you go into the average physician's office, average primary care physician's office, they might not have that much experience or any experience with GLPs. It's not really a part of their practice. They don't know how to get patients access to it. Yeah. So telehealth has become the dominant force in order for patients to access that care and get to an obesity medicine certified physician or someone who really specializes in weight loss. So it's just a perfect use case for this. And I think every physician would be well served, regardless of their specialty, to attain an expertise in weight management, because the next decade of medicine, I don't care what field of medicine you're in, you're going to be forced to become comfortable with these treatments, and that a large percentage of your patients are going to be on them.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Perhaps as you talked about GLP-1 and direct-to-consumer brands, a lot of the direct-to-consumer brands around weight loss have really benefited, so to say, from lower cost compounded drugs, essentially giving more patients access to that kind of treatment. And quite some of the GLP-1 big pharma companies are now basically closing that loophole by saying there is no shortage in GLP-1s anymore. Do you already see a movement in that market? Do you see some of your customers or the kind of direct-to-consumer GLP-1 companies struggling with that new development in the market?
I think ultimately it's going to be a regulatory question. So it's not that the pharmaceutical companies can directly do that or say that. I think it has to come from the regulators, how they're categorizing the different treatment options and if they're in shortage and if they can be compounded, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot left to be determined in terms of how that shakes out. What I will say is there are a lot of patients that are on compounded GLPs in this country. Mm-hmm. And I think it would severely, severely impact their health if they were no longer able to access those medications, because the fact that the branded may or may not be in shortage does not at all compensate for the idea that most people still cannot access these through their insurance, through their local pharmacy, with the costs associated, et cetera. Well, if our goal is really to have people be as healthy as possible, we want to be very careful and very slow moving in how we approach someone's therapy and potentially having to remove or change a medical therapy that's already working for them. And I'm not sure that everyone else's interests are always aligned to that, but that's the way as physicians we think about it.
Yeah, I think that's great. So perhaps as a last question, I think what is really super interesting is that you are so close to the whole development around GLP-1. So can you give us kind of an outlook of kind of GLP-1 development? Will ideally every patient in the US who is slightly obese be on GLP-1s? Do you think there's a risk connected to that with kind of impact on the human body that we do not even know? Do you have any thoughts on like microdosing perhaps?
I think the impacts we've seen have been largely positive. There's, of course, side effects and potential adverse reactions with any medication. So we do review those. And there are certain exclusionary things. For example, patients who have a history of a rare form of cancer called medullary thyroid cancer. So there are certain things that we look for in terms of negatives. But I think the positives are potentially tremendous with these medications and affecting other related diseases people can have and comorbidities, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I know studies are ongoing looking at other indications. For example, Zepbound just got approved for sleep apnea, for example, in addition to obesity care. And I think what we're learning more and more is that your adipocytes, your fat cells, are highly inflammatory cells. We already knew that. So a lot of the inflammatory diseases that we see are much more common, autoimmune diseases, much more common in obese patients compared to non-obese patients. So there's going to be a lot of good that we can do for patients. That being said, there is also alternative uses for these that are off-label. One that we're seeing in the market is microdosing of GLP-1. So a patient comes in, maybe they've struggled their whole life with their appetite or their weight, and they're not currently categorized as overweight with a weight-related comorbidity or obese, but they are killing themselves at home trying to suppress their appetite and remain at a healthy BMI, and that's been their struggle their whole life. Well, why not give someone a low dose of a GLP-1 and allow them to remain at a healthy BMI without them feeling, you know, terrible and trying to, you know, essentially go above and beyond to suppress their appetite, for example. So I think as we move forward in time, we're going to see other indications and also other uses for these products that will benefit more and more people.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark, that was super interesting. I really love this session. There is so much there are so many open questions around telemedicine, and I really think you summarized it extremely well, really focusing on the actual experience for the physician when practicing in telemedicine. And then number two, really focusing on the question of like, where does patient volume actually come from? And perhaps considering working with a platform such as yours that is really focused on securing a lot of patient volume. Thank you so much for sharing your insights.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you to the audience for tuning in today. I really hope that you also learned and that you really understood more about telemedicine. If there's any other physician that is as inspiring as Mark, please send him or her my way. I'm very much looking forward to seeing you next time. Bye-bye.